Welcome to Plot Points with Amanda and Christian,
where we talk about all things fandom.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Christian. And today, we had a little debate on what we were talking about specifically. Not debate, but just going back and forth trying to decide. And we landed on something that I think we all can relate to, which is kind of just things you grew up watching as kids.
Like nostalgic shows, movies, games, things like that. And like why we hang on to those things, why we love them, why they're nostalgic. And a lot of different shows and games and movies and things are being rebooted or revisualized. And like, why is that when you could just create new media?
Yeah, I think before we start recording, she mentioned the whole Lord of the Rings thing that Amazon is doing right now. And she made a good point. It's like why fantasy is in right now, at least with Game of Thrones a little bit. And Avatar is making a resurgence. Why not make a new fantasy show? Why make another Lord of the Rings?
Right, exactly. Let's start with like, what shows did we watch as kids? Kids and like young teenagers. I'm kind of lumping all of that together. And like, why did we like the shows that we watched?
Well, to start, I liked Fresh Prince. I think I appreciate it more now. I haven't seen the episodes in a while, but looking back on them, I know I appreciate them more because of, it was funny and I got into a little hijinks, but I think what I loved about that show was it had a lot of heart. I think a lot of the shows and a lot of the movies I resonate with are the ones that have heart. We'll talk about this in a later episode because you haven't finished it, but speaking of something I'm watching in my adulthood, The Good Place, the reason I loved it so much, which I watched it straight through, like basically I watched it within a span of 4 days. I loved it because it had a lot of heart behind it. And it wasn't just, I think right now and even back then, they weren't just stories that were just, that's just a story, it's just for fun. And it wasn't just a story that like teaches you a lesson. Like I know Full House technically did that a lot, but what made Full House great as well is having the heart, having the emotion behind the characters and having it be relatable and realistic and relatable again, because relatability is important for characters.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, there's a lot of shows that I've seen now that I didn't watch as a kid that were like popular in the 90s and early 2000s, but I was a big PBS kid, PBS Kids kid. So in the 90s, there was Arthur, which I really like. Arthur and Wishbone were probably my two favorites. They have reading in common and just kind of like storytelling in common, which I really liked. But like you said, like Arthur had a lot of relatability to it, because even though they were these animal characters, each kind of like family had like some sort of, they all represented different things. Like Arthur's family, like his dad was a chef, and like Arthur had all these arguments with his little sister that you could definitely relate to if you like were the older or the younger sibling. Everyone always called DW annoying, but I really related to her because like I am the younger sibling. And so I was like, well, yeah, but like, why didn't Arthur just include her in this thing, and then she wouldn't have been like tried to spy on his sleepover? Why didn't he just include her in this part of it, and then she would have been satisfied with that and not tried to spy on the whole thing? But like the other part of all of the different kind of characters in Elwood City had different qualities. Like Buster's family, his mom and dad were divorced and his mom was raising Buster as a single parent. Francine's family is Jewish, and so they have a whole bunch of different episodes on like the different, not festivals, that's not the word, holidays, like the different Jewish holidays. And there's one on her, she is fasting for the first time and how, what that looks like. And that's, I really like, that's one of the things I really, really liked about that show and their Christmas special, Arthur's Perfect Christmas, is everything in Elwood City is diverse, but it's not diverse for the sake of diversity. Like they're not just shoehorning everything in because like, oh, we have to like show all these different types of families, different types of people. That's just who the characters happen to be. Like mm-hmm. Francine's family celebrates Hanukkah because they happen to be Jewish. It's not like, oh, well, we have to represent all of the holidays, so we have to shoehorn everything in. Well, they already are that way.
Yeah, they did diversity before it was cool, which is really good. Like, they didn't do diversity because they felt like they had to. They did it because
that's what the story called for.
Yeah.
Which is the way to do it. And then what I loved about Wishbone is one part of the reason why I love reading so much. If people don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay. So Wishbone is a Jack Russell Terrier owned by Joe Talbot. Classic quintessential like middle of the country, like not New England, but kind of like maybe the Pennsylvania, that kind of area, like lower, not quite New England, but just below that. Quintessential 90s neighborhood. You've got the, you know, the best friends in this, like riding their bikes everywhere, getting into mischief, whatever. But the dog is like a voiceover dog. Like it's an actual dog, but it's like the 90s thing where they had the real life animals, but then they had voices behind them. That's what it was. And each week, each episode, there was like a storyline in, I can't remember what the city, the town's name is, Oakdale. There is a storyline of Joe and his friends in Oakdale. Like maybe they, you know, had a spelling bee and one of like the best speller in the school got sick. And so someone else had to step up. And parallel to that story was some sort of a piece of literature that Wishbone was always the hero in. So if it was like Joan of Arc, actually, I think Joan of Arc is like the one where he's actually the sidekick, but like it goes to the story of Joan of Arc or the Merry Adventures of Robin Hood, then Wishbone portrays the character of Robin Hood. And it goes through the whole storyline of how like an abridged kids version of the story. They had one for Frankenstein, Hercules, The Count of Monte Cristo, Tale of Two Cities. And okay.
So I'm just annoyed right now. Why? That I didn't know the show existed when I was a kid, because I would have loved this show.
Yeah, it's really great. And like you see how like the parallels to like everyday life work into the story in it. And then at the end, they always are like, check out this story at your local library. And so it was really a literacy campaign of getting kids to read.
That's pretty cool.
It's on YouTube if you want to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. That reminded me somehow of something that isn't like that show at all, but has a dog in it, which a lot of people probably know, Clifford the Big Red Dog. Mm-hmm. So again, when we were talking about doing this episode, one of the struggles I was having was I don't remember like what I watched as a kid. Like if someone mentions something, it'll like reach into like the back of my mind, like dark recesses, and pull out the memory, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember watching that. But like, I can't just readily think of something. Yeah. So I remember watching the Clifford the Big Red Dog. I don't remember any episodes that I saw, but I didn't remember watching that. And then you just pull it out of my brain talking about Wishbone. Which kind of ties into the whole nostalgia thing that you were talking about, mm-hmm. of like, apparently they're making a Clifford the Big Red Dog live action movie.
Yeah, I heard about that. I don't know if that's like still a thing. I heard about that like 2 years ago. I was like, how? Did you read the, because I read the books. I actually like the little flip through books better than the show. I think it's one of those shows that you don't necessarily, it's not like a episodic show where every episode ties into another, mm-hmm. which is why you probably don't remember much of the episodes. But I do remember that like Emily Elizabeth and her parents were like the only like humans in the show, if I remember correctly. And then like Clifford had a whole bunch of animal friends. Like there was like a bulldog, a yellow bulldog, and like a little poodle.
Mm-hmm. And then something else. I think there's like three different dogs and then him.
Something like that.
And then, yeah, so there were other humans, but they weren't like the main characters. The main characters were really the kid and her parents. I don't even remember her name. You said it was
Emily Elizabeth.
Yeah, I did not remember that. But the
only reason I remember is because my name is Amanda Elizabeth and her name is Emily Elizabeth.
Yeah. No, so I'm pretty sure there's other people, because I think there's a mayor at one point. So like it's a small town and there's like different like people, but they're like side characters versus the main characters being the dogs and then the three humans. I just know it's being memed right now because like I saw one where it was like, because there's like Godzilla versus King Kong coming out at some point.
Yeah.
So someone did an edit to that title, or not title, that poster. And it's instead of Kong, it was Clifford the Big Red Dog. So it was Godzilla versus Clifford the Big Red Dog.
I don't know if there's, I guess that's the question we're talking about, is like what makes something nostalgic enough to enough people that it's worth rebooting either as a spinoff or just like as its own other thing of just like redoing the series. Because should you like personally, I would love to see a resurgence of Wishbone. I don't know if that means you just redo the entirety of the series, or if you kind of like tell the story in a different way, or maybe it's like Joe's grown up and married and he has kids. That would be an interesting angle, because that's kind of what they do with Boy Meets World, is the story is not really, I mean, the main characters from Boy Meets World are in the show, but the series is not centered on them. It's centered on the kid, like the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of have an answer. So going back to the Lord of the Rings thing, I guess just in the broad sense, not necessarily specifically Lord of the Rings, but like, revisiting some of these things. I have a theory, and it's that these are safe for a lot of them, because if you know the general populace loves a specific thing enough, then as far as money is concerned, why would you bankroll this new thing that you're not sure is going to work, rather than just bankroll a revisit of something that you know audience is going to watch?
So is that why Disney is doing all of these live action things, do you think?
I would assume that, yeah. Because they're not, that's the thing. So I'm iffy about like a lot of reboots. Like spinoffs, I'm okay with, generally speaking, depending on what it is. But reboots, or like, I guess redos and reboots are the same thing. Yeah. So reboots, it depends on what it is for me and how they do it. Because if you're doing, there's a, going back to my famous motto, there's got to be a balance. So you want to make it new enough that anyone who's watching it will feel like they haven't wasted their time and just rewatch something that was done potentially worse than the original thing they watched.
Right.
But you got to keep it respectful enough to the source that it doesn't feel like you're just using a name to make a new story. And that's why I feel like a lot of fall under those two categories.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about it feels safe. I just went on my computer to see if I could pull it up, and I can't find it. So I'm just gonna tell you what I remember from it. But when I was in grad school, we did a focus group project for one of the classes I was in, and we were talking about 90s television shows and if they portrayed, if they accurately portrayed how families looked and acted in the 90s as they actually were in the 90s. So like, did Full House, Fresh Prince, whatever, did they portray how family looked on screen as how it looked in real life? Which isn't what we're talking about. What we did find in those focus groups, because we asked people to draw pictures of families, and then we asked them questions about their family and TV shows and whatever. And I do remember us hitting on this point of like, why, because we pivoted to not 90s TV shows coming back to reboots, and like, why, and did they portray families of today better than they did in the 90s? But one of the things we hit on of like, why are these coming back, is because people kept coming back to, well, this is what I watched as a kid, and this is, it's familiar, and it's bringing back all these memories of being a kid and feeling safe and like enjoying these things with my family. And that's one of the points that we found a lot, was people were saying it's nostalgic, it's warm, it's safe, it's inviting. And that's why we like watching things have a different spin, but still go back to what we watched when we were kids. And we were interviewing primarily like college freshmen at the time, which was, this was like 3 years ago now. So like kids,
yeah, and who, college freshmen already homesick in general. So
yeah. And, but like, it was like late 90s, early 2000s, the age that we are kind of getting. But a lot of these kids that we found also had watched like pure 90s television because they had siblings. And so we got a good mix of shows, the original shows that are now being rebooted now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, my psychology brain just turned on. So, but I can't remember terms. So, because I was a psych minor in college, but I do not remember any of the classes.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to go and look up the paper that we did, but I can't.
Yeah, there's like
find
a critical
it.
Period or something like that. There's like an age where like a lot of mm-hmm. things sort of become. One thing that they do mention is like a lot of your tastes, like whether it be political, music, whatever, tend to when you're earlier on in like pre-adolescence and adolescence, come from your parents, come from your upbringing. And then once you start to sort of meet peers, that'll also affect you. So we are all kind of a combination of our connections, basically. I don't remember if that's not a psych term. I don't think. I think that's more of a sociology thing. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. Not a doctor. But where was I going with that?
I can't find
but that
the
also
whole
makes
paper.
Sense mm-hmm. that also makes sense because on a broader scale like we each every generation is kind of its own culture, especially in specific regions like America,
right?
So a lot of us might have some sort of through line of taste. Like we might have different tastes. I might like rock, you might like country, but there are still things that we all share because we're in a similar age group.
True.
So I think that's when you're targeting a specific market, it makes sense with the whole it feels like home thing to pick something that feels like home and make for them to watch and want to pay money for. Because even though I know a lot of these reboots are crappy, I will still give them a chance, generally speaking.
Yes.
Not so much with Disney. I say that and then I've watched a lot of Disney reboots.
Yeah, like I think I've seen except Mulan. I haven't watched live action Mulan yet, but I've seen I think all the other live action movies, even though like after watching the Jungle Book live action, I was appalled. Like I hated the Jungle Book live action. Because
I don't think I saw that one.
So in the original animated, Baloo is portrayed as this like happy-go-lucky character who like really cares about Mowgli, but also is just kind of like that absent-minded babysitter who doesn't really know how to take care of a kid. But in the live action,
yeah, and then there's the cat, the panther, I think that's like
panther,
really strict and all this
yeah.
stuff.
But in the live action, he's portrayed as this person who's just or this bear who's just manipulating Mowgli to get what he wants. I'm like, that's not blue at all.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I'm not going to watch it. So. That's the thing. If I hear something, that especially with these Disney reboots, I don't know. I love Disney, but I guess the nostalgia tug isn't as strong for me as with my friends. So stuff like that, I'm less likely to watch the reboots versus like, I'll probably watch the Clifford the Big Red Dog reboot just to see how it is. I got to be honest.
I won't.
Yeah.
Going back to what you said about connection points with like, you know, in your like marketing scheme or whatever, you're going to have certain groups that are going to gravitate towards something. And that's true within like any culture that you have. So like for you and me, for example, both of us were raised in like Christian environments when we were kids, and so VeggieTales is coming out with like VeggieTales had a reboot on Netflix. It was awful. It was horrendous, and like nobody watched it. And then the original creators for VeggieTales actually got the licensing back, I believe is the story, and now they're creating another reboot, and they marketed it as like they have like the original voices, the original characters, very, very similar animation to the original. And there's, and because that, like, VeggieTales, I think, is one of those things that like Christian kids know about and like also secular kids knew about as well to an extent. Like, I find way more people know about VeggieTales than I thought.
Yeah, no, it's weird because like I'll find people who like didn't grow up in the church or not even Christian, and they're just like, yeah, watch VeggieTales. Like, it was just a kid's show.
Yeah.
And which is interesting because then you'll think about like Bible Man. We both know about Bible Man, but it's so vague.
For those of you who don't know,
Bible Man.
Way more people who know about VeggieTales than Bible Man.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Bible Man is basically a churchy Batman Jedi guy. Like, he's a superhero that wears armor. And then in the iterations I saw, apparently he didn't always have this, but he has like his own lightsaber and he fights different villains. The one that like sticks in my brain is there was a villain who was like tried to spread anger in the world. And he like fought him or stuff like that.
Why do you think though? Because like VeggieTales did almost the exact same thing with like every episode. There was, some of them were like recreating Bible stories, like Josh and the Big Wall, where they're going to Jericho and instead of rocks, they throw Slurpees down on the Israelites. But like, it's a Bible story. And then some of them were like life lessons. And then like you have Larry Boy, who like did something very similar to Bible Man, where it's like he's taking on like the fib from outer space. So yeah. Like, why is VeggieTales so much more known in the mainstream than Bible Man? Like, is it going back to that nostalgia factor that we're talking about?
Maybe. Again, these are just theories. This is the opinion of one random former film student in his bedroom right now. I think personally that Bible Man, if I remember correctly, was a little more preachy, while VeggieTales more just told stories. And the stories happen to be biblical in nature. Some of them happen to be morals, like fit from outer space. That's something that you don't have to necessarily, like, it enriches it when you take it from the biblical perspective. But teaching a kid not to lie, I feel like, is universal. So I feel like that's going back to the whole relatability. Going back to the whole relatability concept, I feel like VeggieTales, you can relate to a lot more depending on whatever culture you grew up in. Also, it's vegetables that like float and talk, which is kind of cool.
That's also true. And I think relatability has a lot to do with it. There's a video, a YouTube video that I showed you a couple weeks back about this guy who has a YouTube channel who like shows his friends a whole bunch of things for the first time, like videos and stuff. And he was showing one of his atheist friends. The guy happens to be a Christian. A lot of his videos are like looking at different media from like different Christian lenses. And he was showing his secular friend the Prince of Egypt for the first time. And that was one of the things.
Are you the reason I was watching that channel?
Yeah.
The YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Cause he watched Lord of the Rings with that guy too.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen that episode, but I can't remember the friend's name, but I think he's on a lot of the videos because they seem to be really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the things he said was like, even watching this from like a non-believer's perspective, it's still like a really good story. It's still like the cinematography is really great. The music is good. And that's also something VeggieTales really does well, is the songs and all of the animation and all the stuff like that.
It's funny you mentioned Prince of Egypt, because that's actually something that I've been thinking is deserving of a live action reboot. Like, personally, from my opinion on reboots, is that I think they should take things that had good potential but weren't really executed properly and then just redo it in a better way. Prince of Egypt is the exception, because I think Prince of Egypt was a masterpiece, honestly.
Yeah.
Just the visuals, the music. I still listen to the music. There's cover, like there's a guy who does like metal covers of songs, and he did a metal cover of the Prince of Egypt, and it sounds epic. Even if you don't like metal, I think a lot of people would like this version of it. It just stands out. But I think if done well, a live action version of this could also be equally as good.
I don't know. Part of me agrees with you, because like that would be really, I think it could be done very well. Like you could definitely expand on like the animation you could have if they did the casting well and they did like the setting and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be really cool to see like all of the Egyptian architecture and all of that, and seeing the waters being parted in the Red mm-hmm. Sea. But I think there's also a huge potential to do it wrong for mm-hmm. a variety of different reasons. One, if obviously you're gonna have to use CGI for parting the Red Sea and probably most of the plagues. If that's done wrong, if the motivation to do it isn't in the right place. I think that's also part of the reason why Prince of Egypt did so well with a mainstream audience, was because I don't think it was trying to be a biblical epic Christian movie. I think it was just DreamWorks saw the potential for it to be a good story.
Mm-hmm.
While also trying their best to stay true to the biblical story, which I think for the most part, it's a pretty accurate representation. Like there's the things that aren't correct are pretty minor. Like the only thing I would say that is a major, not flaw, but just thing that they didn't cover was the fact that Moses had a stutter. And that Aaron did most of the talking for him, but I can mm-hmm. see why they did it from like a main character perspective, because that would essentially make Aaron the main character and not Moses. Yeah. And the entire story of the Prince of Egypt is it's Moses' story. Yes, you're telling the story of Exodus, but you're telling in the first act, you know, Moses was a little baby and he's rescued, and then you're telling the story of him being a prince and not being aware that of his true heritage, and then finding it out, and then coming back and like through God's help restoring like the Israelites' freedom.
Mm-hmm. And they compare that to which I've never seen this movie, and it's one of the few movies where I saw the trailer and I was like, I'm not interested in this movie. Was Exodus Gods and Kings, which is
I haven't seen it.
It's a reboot of Prince of Egypt.
No, it's not.
It is a recreation of a Bible story. And I don't know if that's separate. If you're just retelling a classic story, either like from the Bible, or other historical sources, any mythologies, like you mentioned with Wishbone, Robin Hood, like that King Arthur.
Robin and King Arthur have been done so many times.
Yeah, if that's a reboot or if that's something else entirely, but either way, like you're retelling the same story. And they still run the risk of either making it too similar to everything else that's happened already, or too different that it disrespects the source.
And I think that Prince of Egypt did that balance really well, because they definitely didn't, it wasn't just like, oh, well, we're going to tell the story and like sanitize it of everything biblical to not offend people, kind of what Noah did.
I haven't seen it. I intended to.
It wasn't as awful as people say, but it wasn't a biblical story. Like it was just, they took the inspiration and they ran with it, versus like Prince of Egypt was in, like even in before the movie starts, it says like this story was taken from this chapter and verse at Exodus. This is a interpretation of it, but we tried to stay as true as possible. And like they didn't shy away from showing how the Israelites were enslaved in Egypt and everything that went with that. They didn't shy away from showing the plagues.
Yeah, for a kids movie especially, that's kind of, it was done well too. It wasn't watered down for kids, but at the same time it wasn't overly macabre that it was not suitable for kids.
So I think that's why it did well, because they neither tried to be preachy with their message, nor did they try to sanitize it so much that you lose the essence of the Bible story. Because the thing about Bibles, like the Bible stories in the Bible, is very few of them are mushy gushy lovey-dovey story. Like the Bible stories were real life. Like they covered things that were happening in everyday life, and everyday life is not sanitized. It's just not.
And if you do take the religiosity out of it, which I'd advise against if you're making a movie about it, but if you do, it's still, you still have stories about real people with real problems making a real mistake. Like King David is hailed as like a man after God's own heart. But if you look at the story of David, he made a lot of mistakes. And he was a human guy. He had a falling out with his sons.
I'd love to see a lie, like either animated or live action about like the full story of King David. Because
Goes on Goliath.
Everyone goes for David and Goliath, or on the flip side, they go to Bathsheba.
Yeah, and there's so much more to David's life than that.
And
there was a whole political sort of split. I think it was after King Solomon, the kingdom of Israel split into two separate countries. It's a very big, it's like Game of Thrones level of political intrigue, but they always focus on the same exact stories every time.
I feel like maybe why that hasn't happened though is one of two things. I think it's, you've got the Christian community on one side, I'm not saying the entirety of Christian community, but a section of Christian community being like, well, we don't want to show, you know, because like, you're right, like David was a man after God's own heart, but he made so many mistakes in his life, and so many of them, those mistakes were messy and like had consequences and all those things.
Yeah, generational consequences.
Right. And they're like, well, we don't want to show, you know, all of that, and it be like, oh well, like there, because if you were true to that movie, there would be tons of violence, there would be tons of sexual content, there would be so many things that would be considered problematic.
Yeah, honestly, the Bible is fairly R-rated if you want to look at it from that perspective. So it's difficult to make a movie like that.
But then on the flip side, you have a more secular community who'd be like, oh, we don't want to do a movie about King David because nobody's going to watch that, because only Christians are going to watch that. So like, I feel like you need a very medium filmmaker who's going to be like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, again, balance. I will never stop preaching balance in all things. Not Thanos way, but he had a point, which we'll talk about another episode. Anyway.
We got off on a tangent, but I think it was a good tangent.
Yeah, there's still a through line of reboots and how to do them right and how to do them wrong. When you have a source material, it's, no matter if it's a reboot or if it's a story from history, there is that balance of, and there's always those two sides. Like for what you touched on with a Bible story, you got Christians wanting it to be potentially as accurate as possible, but obviously shying away from the blood sometimes. And then secular people wanting it to not have as much religious not to be preachy, basically. So in essence, you still have the respecting the source material on the churchy side and the still reinventing it, having something new to say. So it's not just the same old story on the secular side. So it's still the same thing. As when you have source material, it seems like you need to find that medium balance of respecting and innovating at the same time, which I think that's why it's so difficult to make reboots and nostalgia pieces. But I also think because of the nature of nostalgia, they keep being remade because people want the money.
That's true.
Or they just, people want the, like, taking away the money aspect of the evil corporations and production companies wanting money. Me as a potential writer, it's really exciting to be able to have the opportunity to write something from something I love. So like, it's taking away the money influence, there is still that air of I'm a writer and I want to recreate a story because I think it'd be fun to play with it.
Right.
So I think that's also kind of where the want to make these films comes from, these reboots and spin-offs.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, that's where I know you haven't really delved into the world of Avatar that much, but Legend of Korra is something that I would love to sink my teeth into and remake a live action version of that, because I think it's a good story it had a lot of potential, but ran into a lot of production problems. And so a lot of people in the Avatar fandom don't like it. I think lately there's been more of a whole community-wide shift of starting to like it a little more. But at the same time, I definitely think that's the story that could be told. Not better in the sense that the original was bad, but like can be retold in a way that respects and honors that while also taking it into a new light, especially if it's live action. Whereas a live action Avatar, which they are doing, I'm worried about because how are they going to do that? Are they going to respect the source material? Are they going to rehash the same thing? It's the whole balance thing again.
Right. I mean, and you could say the same thing for any variety of restarts and reboots that are coming out, like the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's a TV show, so it could look totally different than what the movies looked like. And is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is it going to take source material from the books that maybe the movies didn't use as much of?
That's why I'm a little more excited for that than I am for an Avatar. They are making a live action Avatar. And they are making a live action Lord of the Rings. I am a little more excited for Lord of the Rings because they have that source material that's outside the movies they can still fall back on. So there's still new stuff. It's still stuff to respect and new at the same time, because stuff general audiences like me who haven't read the books have not seen before. Well, I mean, I've delved into the lore on my own, but have not technically seen before in a media. So it'll be new, quote unquote new, but also respectful at the same time. So I'm excited for that. Avatar, there's really just the show. So like, there's not much to pull from. So I think that has more of a danger of not being done well.
Yeah, that makes sense. You definitely can still have source material and still royally screw something up, though.
Yeah. Like, speaking of Avatar, there's a, I don't know if you've seen the movie either, but
I have not seen
the, yeah.
I want to watch it at some point just because everyone tells me that is absolutely awful. But like, you guys said the same thing about Thor Dark World, and I didn't think, like, it wasn't the most spectacular MCU movie ever, but it wasn't bad.
Thor Dark World, to me, is just bland. There's not much really going on. There's a bad guy. He defeats the bad guy. That's the end of the story. Not Avatar, The Last Airbender. Just The Last Airbender. When I saw it as a kid, not having seen the show, yeah, it was all right. I wasn't amazed by it. I think M. Night Shyamalan, at that point in my life, had done a lot of better films. Because the reason we watched it was my parents and I saw Signs together. We saw The Sixth Sense together, stuff like that. So we're like, oh, this would be exciting. But we had no idea about the TV show. But now having watched the TV show, I rewatched it because Dante Basco, he's the voice of one of the characters, he wanted to watch it on a live stream. So I actually watched it with my girlfriend. And it's not great. It's not as bad as people make it out to be. People joke that they're like the movie doesn't exist in like Avatar fan pages. Like it's not. It's a movie.
It's not a resounding review, but okay.
It's a movie. They don't respect. Like okay, here's the thing. When I see movies I'm not really a huge fan of, a lot of times I'll still watch the behind the scenes and I'll see all the crap that a lot of movie makers went through. And I can kind of relate to that, not as an experienced filmmaker, but just as a guy who's had way too much on his plate. And M. Night Shyamalan did not understand the story. Like he even said so. So like, and he only did it because his kids wanted him to do it, which is kind of admirable in a way. And like, I can respect that. But that's the thing. Like it wasn't made well because he didn't understand how to do it. But it doesn't mean it can't be made well. That doesn't mean he intentionally disrespected a lot of the stuff that happened. It just means he did the best he could. But
fair enough.
Yeah, it's not a great movie, if I'm being honest.
All right. I don't really have anything else to say about nostalgia, kids' TV shows. I mean, we can go to our geek moment of the week if you want.
Speaking of nostalgia, I guess this is modern nostalgia for me because I started, or adult nostalgia for me because I started Marvel as an adult. But we want to talk about WandaVision.
Hang on. It's time for the geek moment of the week.
Yay.
All right, continue.
So, I think I'm just going to leave that right where it's at. I'm considering cutting it and putting it in the beginning, but I might just leave it there. It's back in the middle. But yeah, no, so we talked about WandaVision last week. It will be Monday, like this past Monday for you guys, meaning that the episode aired after the WandaVision episode. But we talked about it the day before the WandaVision episode aired. So some of the stuff we talked about came true. And it was cool to see, in my opinion.
Yeah. I was almost kind of underwhelmed when I found out that Agnes was the villain, because we had talked about it on the show. And I don't remember if I said, oh, it's definitely going to happen, or if that's predictable, but like he texted me saying, yeah, I texted you and I was like, oh, the episode was good this week. And he texted me back and he's like, oh, it was so good. And I was like, oh, it's kind of predictable.
I'm excited for what it potentially could mean. But I respect, because people have been saying, oh, it's got to be Agnes for a while now, since the first episode. I've seen some people saying it on the internet, and I don't know how much control they had to change things at that point in time, but if they did, I respect that they didn't. There's a quote from George R. R. Martin, who's basically like, if you have a plan and then someone, I think I mentioned this in another episode, if you have a and they get it exactly right, you can't then go change your plan, because then it won't make as much sense. So kudos to them for, even if it was slightly predictable, they still went with it, because it was still a cool, it definitely has potential to be something big in the following episodes, because this is the big reveal that everyone was guessing. So now we don't have a clue what's happening next. I mean, people who've read the comics know who the character is. I Wikipedia'd Agatha Harkness and learned a little bit about her, but I still don't know enough about her.
I didn't, just simply because MCU doesn't have a large history of following the comics. They kind of do their own thing. So I didn't want to read something and then it not do what I read.
There you go. Speaking of source material to balance, this turned from nostalgia to source material, and now I'm bringing the episode that we just had back into the geek moment of the week. But the way Marvel does things with the comics, I think, is a good example of the balance, because they respect the source material enough to pull stuff from it, while at the same time reinventing it in minute ways that make it different and good for modern and general audiences. I think this is a perfect example.
I also really loved that the episodes more and more making Darcy Lewis into like her own full-fledged character, rather than like just a sidekick comic relief, because she's one of my favorite parts about Thor. I love how she's like smart, geeky, but also hilarious. And so I love that she's like getting her own like plot points and storylines, as opposed to just being like throwing jokes at Thor.
Yeah. No, I like that. And I like the FBI guy, I think, to a lesser degree, but I do like that they're fleshing him out a little more from Ant-Man, which you said you caught up, right? So you've seen that Ant-Man?
Yeah, I've seen every MCU movie to date. I haven't seen X-Men, but like if it's in the MCU, I have seen it.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, so they're fleshing out Darcy a little more, not him as much, but I like that they're fleshing both of them out.
Yeah.
Darcy is hilarious as a character. That's why I think we have the same geek moment of the week, unless you have something else.
No, that was fine.
I've been watching Clone Wars a little bit, because she told me to.
Teasing for our next episode, we will be getting Christian's reaction on season one of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. I'm very much looking forward to that. So follow us on our social media, please follow us on our social media. Let us know where you're listening from. I'd really like to know who's listening and like where everyone's from. Plot Points with Amanda and Christian on Facebook and Plot Points AC on Instagram. Follow us, give us a like,
and let us know any geek moment of the week that you might have. We really honestly seriously want to get to know you guys. We don't know who you are listening. We just know people are listening, which is kind of crazy, because we're just two friends talking about nerd stuff, but it's also kind of awesome. And I'd love to know what you guys like and what you guys would like to us to talk about in future episodes.
Yep. So we'll see you in the next episode.
Goodbye. Bye.